The reason I got into theater is because I felt like a freak and I found my circus. You know, I found a place where I fit. The talent is unquestionable, undeniable. And all I see every time they perform is the limit that they put on themselves.
What's the impact I want to make on the world with my work? What's the impact I want to make on my audience? What's the impact I want to make on my colleagues?
The Working Actor NYC, that's Patrick Richwood.
Benjamin House.
This episode of The Working Actor NYC may contain profanity and some adult concepts, so please use your discretion.
Patrick Richwood and I have decades of experience being working actors in New York City. It's like Hollywood and Broadway and TV.
Between the two of us, we have hundreds of years of experience.
Can you imagine? Like, just decrepit ancient people. And we want to share that with people. And the awesome thing, I have to tell you something I'm super proud of, is that as people discover our little podcast, we are building this little community, this little tribe of people who...
It's a little podcast that could.
It's really fun. I just really like it.
Me too. I'm having a blast. And yes, you're right. There's a conversation starting.
Yeah. And so when we launched our YouTube channel a couple of episodes ago, we invited people to comment down below. And oh my God, somebody did. And so today we are going to be talking about Nat Welly's comment that she left. And I got to tell you, I adore Nat Welly. This is Natalie Welsh. And we have done two or three shows together now. And talk about person most likely to be on Broadway. It is Natalie Welsh, this young lady right here. So on our episodes about casting directors, she said, love this so much. I'd love to hear about why you decided to be an actor, why you love it. How have you returned to that over the years? Heart.
Okay, Natalie, that's three questions. So I'm so sorry, but you missed the assignment entirely.
Fail. But the thing that got me super excited is that we can share, like this business can get you down. There are things about this business that we don't love. So why do we keep doing it? And why have you kept doing it over all of these many years, Patrick Richwood?
Things about life that we don't love at all. And we keep doing life. And I think that's because we figure we don't have a choice. I keep doing it. I mean, the big answer, we can get specific, but the big
number
answer,
one,
I keep doing it because I figure I don't have a choice. What else am I gonna do? Go and learn to be a nurse?
Oh,
no, I really mean it. I have it that I don't have a choice. I don't have it in there that there's a possibility of something else, and for me, that's a huge piece of it. I remember.
So you're talking about acting. You have to do acting. You're doing acting because you have to do it.
Yeah, and storytelling too. The contextual answer, it starts with, I have got it in my brain that there's no choice. That's me. Everybody's different. Me. My mom always said, don't find a job to fall back on because then you'll fall back.
It's that part. You often hear people say, like, if you can do something else, go do that, because being an actor has a lot of, I wouldn't say not fun times, but you've got to build a lot of resilient spine to get through and actually make a career out of doing this.
Do you have a broad answer like that?
My number one tip on how I stay in love with acting is the people.
Yes.
The reason that I stay in love doing what I do is because of the people that I meet along the way. And they are my community. They are my support. And it goes way back to the reason I became an actor in the first place, which is because I did not fit in. I went to an all boys sports playing Christian school in Sydney, Australia. And it was even in fucking, I was even in boarding school for 2.5 years. I did not fit with these people. They all came from farms in the country and loved playing sports. Guess what? I did not come from a farm in the country and I did not love playing sports. But something I was good at was acting. It felt good to me. I was good at it. And eventually, once I left school, the people who did theater felt like my people. So the reason I got into theater is because I felt like a freak and I found my circus. You know, I found a place where I fit.
That's fantastic. Yeah. I wonder, I dare say that must be such a common thread for so many of us. For me, the experience of tribe, I call it tribe, happened when I first visited New York. We went on one of those I Love New York trips where you do, you know, see 43 shows in a week and, you know,
Can you imagine?
Oh my God. And out of work, we did. We saw like 8 shows in 1 week or in 6 days or something like that.
Yeah.
In the winter. And we had an out of work actor who was our chef. I still remember his name. You want to know it?
Tell me.
Chico Casanoir.
Have we ever looked up Chico Casanoir?
Well, actually, oddly, I'll tell you that in a second. But anyway, when one of the things we did, we were our drama teacher, and this was in high school, first year of high school, was this guy who had been an actor in New York and decided he wanted to be out in California. And one thing led to another, and he ended up teaching drama at this high school. So he was like, now, when we go into this restaurant, you have to be, you know, nice to the waiter. You can't be this. You can't be that. New Yorkers know to, and da, 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 know what you want. We're going to leave a big tip and all this stuff.
Oh, life lessons as well.
Yeah. So I remember we walked in, we had that big round table at Joe Allen reserved, and we walked in, all 8, 9 of us or 12 of us, however, I think there was 11 of us, and with our drama teacher and Chico Casanoir, and I instantly went, I'm at headquarters. This is where the tribe lives. I found my people. And
you knew it straight away. Like even then you knew it.
Straight away, because the room was vibrating with it. Theater people everywhere, posters, things, all that. People I recognized, the people I'd seen right on the stage the day before or whatever. It was just thrilling and magical. And New York is quintessentially New York. This is it. So that's the first time I tasted it.
Do you find yourself returning to that now? Do you ever find yourself walking into the theater or the rehearsal room and feeling like, oh, right, these are my people?
Oh, every time. Okay, so let's take that middle part of her question and say, how do you keep falling in love with it, if I understand the question right? That's one of the ways that I continually fall in love with it, and it's as reliable as the morning sun. Why? Yeah. Because it's completely rings true for me right to my bones. I know that I have that same feeling every time I walk into a first day of rehearsal that I had in Joe Allen that night. Oh, here we are. And now, because I'm so experienced at it after 45 years, I get that feeling early. I get that feeling as soon as I get a job. Sometimes I get that feeling going into an audition. Like, well, actually, I do get that feeling going into an audition. I get that feeling. In fact, if the audition is
walking into Pearl Studios, I know it's going to happen because I'm going to run into 4 people that I've done a job with at some point.
So you kidding? You could stand in the lobby of Pearl Studios here in New York City and eventually see everyone you ever worked with in your entire life. If you stood there long enough, you might turn into a barnacle, but you would.
I have shared on this podcast before that one of the audition room tips that Susan Blackwell shared with me was to walk in the door and say, hello, friends. I genuinely mean that now. Yeah. Even if I've never met you before, I know we're part of the tribe, you know? And so it's easy to say it and mean it. Okay, number 2. What's your number 2 tip, Patrick Richwood?
Collaboration. Whenever I have doubt or whenever I'm blue or... Yeah, when I have a drop in cabin pressure about my career, as soon as I remember the word collaboration, that whole concept lights me up from within. More than anything I can think of. That's why I'm so into new works and new projects and creating new works and projects as well, because the collaboration is particularly healthy. You know, it's juicy.
Everybody tingles with it. Like, it's like, what are we going to create? And you can't do it alone.
It's charged with possibility.
You can bring your piece of the pie into the room, but you need everybody else's contribution to
make the bread rise. Everybody's an ingredient.
Your tip number 2 is actually very similar to my tip number 2, which is the actual work itself, the work of collaboration is one part of it, but the actual job that I have to do on my own of taking the words that I've been given by a writer and investing them with life and figuring out how to make the joke land.
Love that.
Yeah. Yeah. And making it real for myself in the world of the piece and or making the song come alive in a way that the writers intended, like the actual work itself. And this applies in the ensemble as well, making sure that my harmony fits beautifully with the other harmonies so that we create one sound together. That shit lights me up.
See, you're better than I am. I'm more like, I'm like, I hope I'm on the right note.
We're all hoping you're on the right note, Patrick. Yeah,
I know. And it's usually such a lost cause. You just said something. You said, you know, in the way that the writer intends. And when it's elevated, often it presents in a way the writer didn't intend.
That's how you know you're really firing is when it becomes more than everybody thought that it could be.
Yeah, that's, to me, that's what this is where that we're talking about. We have different words for it, but this very thing is like, it all ends up being more than it was on the page, much, much more than it was on the page or in anyone's one preconceived idea. It becomes this living thing. And that just excites the shit out of me. And it always has.
And let's get real. You don't necessarily feel that joy with every single person in the room.
Oh, no, definitely.
People are great at it. And you just focus your energy in that direction. The people who are not great at it, you have to just sort of go, okay, we're in a working relationship. I'm not going to be a dick about it. I'm going to let them do all the dick moves. I'm going to stay focused on the joy that I can find in collaborating with that person, and that person. Rest of y'all, good luck to you.
And well, yeah, we've both worked with people like that. I just worked with someone. Was so such a no that he actually gave me a kick. I got a kick out of him. And then we ended up being friends because
so predictable.
Well, I was authentic with him. I don't think he was actually being authentic. I think he was in defense mode. You can't go in like, well, I'll be fully collaborative if everybody else is. You have to be. Here's who I am. I'll if people want to gravitate around this. Here it is. And generally they do.
Yeah, generally absolutely they do. Yeah.
That person's too bogged down with whatever their stuff is to see the big picture.
It limits them so much. Yeah. Because this person's discovery of the work and the discovery of the moment and the laughs and the possibility is limited because they're limited by their own experience, and they're not allowing the experience of other people to allow their work to grow exponentially.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, in your opinion, that's the other piece.
That
we always
was science, Patrick. That was science. I just used science.
Exponential. I heard that $20 word come out of your $5 mouth.
There will be a quiz at the end of this podcast.
Miracles happen here, folks. We're getting close. We're getting close to some real, real good shit here. No, I mean, but that's the other thing. Another part of collaboration. My opinion is not the truth. I have it that they're limited and they're blah 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 blah. That doesn't mean it's not going to work really well for that person going for. You know, like we see people, do well all the time, and
the talent is unquestionable. The talent is unquestionable, undeniable. And all I see every time they perform is the limit that they've put on themselves.
On that very job I was talking about in Dallas, I did that very thing. I got lost in my noise and ended up really actually being kind of toxic without knowing it, just because of a very simple phenomenon that happened. I forgot why I was there. there. I wasn't there anymore for the love of the collaboration and the love of my tribe. I thought I was there to create a role for Broadway and to be part of this amazing thing with this amazing team. And I didn't start out that way at all. I lost my way. I had interactions with other people in the cast that were toxic on their part. And then it brought out some things in me. Then I instigated toxic ideas to them. It was just a bad thing. It's so regrettable, but not in the sense that I did learn a valuable, really life lesson for keeps. And that's, I forgot why I was there.
I have to say that you are leading beautifully and seamlessly and perfectly into what I wrote down as tip number three, which is the challenge of showing up in the room as the person that I want to be.
Yes.
I do kind of love that challenge. I get a lot of satisfaction from showing up in the room, in the rehearsal room, or when I walk through the stage door as the person that I want to be working with. And all of the toxic stuff, that's the challenge to work through. We sort of get this impression that the theater is a different kind of workplace. And in a lot of ways, it is. And yet it is still a workplace. And workplace rules are often necessary and needed. It's not a free-for-all.
So grab out.
Depends who it is, and context is everything, and how much have you built a relationship with this person where you can? Has consent been established verbally or otherwise? I seriously, it is a miracle that I'm not in jail right now for some of the stuff. Yes, what's your third tip, Patrick Richwood? What helps you stay in love with what you do?
I think it's close to yours. It's like a twin sister. That sister.
But mine's the prettier one, right?
Sisters. What?
Mine's the prettier one, right?
Yes.
Yours is the smart one with glasses, and mine is the pretty one.
The prettier and older one.
Thank you.
My third thing is impact. When I think about what I think of as a get me out of bed possibility, it's the impact. And that's what brings me to who is the man I want to be? Who am I committed to being? I will remember to ask myself that question throughout the day. What's the impact I want to make on the world with my work? What's the impact I want to make on my audience? What's the impact I want to make on my colleague? A friend of mine, a mentor of mine used to say, around me, what? Around me, he used to say, people who were historically not self-expressed are. That was his way of remembering, and it was true. People who were not particularly good at being self-expressed and empowered, around him, they were.
They found their voice, yeah.
He generated it. He sourced it. And for me, that's what impact is all about. What's the impact I want to make? How big of an impact, or how great of an impact can I imagine?
And I love that. I love that, because you are encompassing both what is the impact that my presence in this work is having upon this paying audience, but it's also about what is the impact that I'm having on the person standing next to me on stage, or the person that I stand next to in the wings.
Or the guy operating the spot.
Exactly right. I fucking love that, Patrick.
Now, it's interesting, because my ways of getting at these things are always from context first. I just noticed that. I'm looking at the way I pieced it together. I always have to attach it to something bigger than me, something bigger than this room I'm in, something bigger than this conversation.
I have something to say about this, because it actually ties back to sort of the second point that I was talking about, which is, the joy of bringing a work to life. And I will never forget, as long as I live, the experience that I had over 25 years ago, when we were putting together Les Mis in Australia. We had a very collaborative process with the British director. And to put together the final scene of the show, Valjean, Cosette, and Marius are downstage as Valjean dies. And the ghosts of the barricade people lines up at the back of the stage, and we sing you know, a version of Do You Hear the People Sing? And so we sang it around the piano. We staged it very rudimentarily. And then the director said, okay, everybody get in a circle. And he said to us, if you could fight and die for one thing, what would it be? Benjamin.
Oh, he picked you first.
First. And
I know what you're going to say. I know what you're going to say.
It still chokes me up. I found myself saying, I would give my life if it would free the world from AIDS. Because this was the late 90s. It wasn't done yet. We didn't have PrEP. And I would give my life if it would free the world from AIDS. And so every night when I was on stage singing Somewhere Beyond the Barricade, Is There a World You Long to See? I knew exactly what I was talking about. I knew the story that I was telling. I knew why I was there. I knew what my purpose was through this artwork. And that sustained me. Exactly right. It's the context that I was performing under for 2 years. That story was meaningful to me every night for 2 years because I knew why I was telling the story.
I love that. I love that. I knew you were going to say something along those lines. I didn't know what you were going to say. I thought I did, but yeah, very moving. Very, very moving. But and actually, it addresses something that's kind of floating around in the background of her question, I think, which is, how do you keep it fresh? And you just nailed it. You keep it fresh by having something so true to you as your story, as your context. Context never gets old. Content can, but context never does. A really, really beautiful teacher, a beautiful spirit of a teacher I had, would say all the time, it's the context that informs the content, not the other way around. This was a good conversation. This really,
I liked it a lot. I hope that gives you a little bit of fire to get through your audition today.
I hope whoever's listening to this or watching this actually gets a jump start from this, because I have. I'm like, whoo!
Let's go. So if you've enjoyed this video, please drop us a comment down below, or send us a DM on Instagram. We love comments. We love questions. Look at the way it's turned us on today and blown our skirts up.
I'm not wearing anything from the waist down.
Oh my God, don't make him stand up.